From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Despite the fact that the Soviet Union has been gone since December of 1991, it appears that the U.S. Congress, U.S. media, and the U.S. intel agencies, most of which were implicated in the USSR's demise, haven't noticed that they no longer have the so-called evil empire to kick around. Just about every political, social, or economic problem that faces Washington still gets blamed on Moscow. Under the present conditions, it is worth noting exactly what the details were of the dismantling of the USSR, and towards that end, we spoke with Professor Luciana Bone via Skype on Wednesday. So, Luciana, we've been talking for better than a year and change about the history of the Soviet Union, and today, we can talk about the end days. Might be particularly appropriate at this stage in the U.S. history to be looking at the end days of the Soviet Union. In some ways, there's some parallels. And in order to get to that, maybe pick up, as you suggested, in the 80s and 1990 and sort of work our way into what happened in 1991.
Yeah, sure. Well, the year 1991 is key, of course. So many things happened. But in terms of our program, it's also, it's the year in which something called the August coup occurred.
Right.
And that was the last, 1991 is the year in which the last attempt to save the Soviet Union was made, and it was made between August and 23 days and 22 August. So we're talking today, 22 August, about around this, what is called a coup in Western discourse or historiography.
Right.
It's called the coup, the Gang of Eight. But in effect, it was a last-ditch attempt to prevent what
right.
was going to happen.
To preserve it. In other words, you had Gorbachev doing, let's say Gorbachev were president of the United States, you have Gorbachev essentially restructuring the U.S. government, pushing control from Washington down to the state governments like the Southerners wanted to do in the Civil War. And the people in the U.S. government standing up and saying, no, here's the Constitution, here's the history of the country, these are the government structures under which you took power, you can't change this, not without consulting the people, and they called their attempt to protect the government against Gorbachev and ultimately Yeltsin and the U.S., they called that a coup.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were the legitimate government, even though...
That's correct.
You know, so how can the legitimate government have a coup? But at any
right.
rate,
right.
yeah, it's all screwed up, what we're told. I mean, we need a complete inversion. So we're starting in medias res, in the middle of things here, 1991 August.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about this coup that you just summarized, the ideas, you know, to act legally. Curious thing was that Gorbachev was supposed to sign a treaty called the Union of Sovereign States, that is to change the name,
right?
Of the Soviet Union on the 20th of August, and he was on vacation.
Right. Well, let's back out for a minute, because you prepared a really useful outline. Gorbachev slowly works his way, and the forces around him slowly work their way into this position. First, by changing the way that the Soviet Union relates to the other Warsaw Pact members. In other words, you had a block of socialist countries that had been standing up to the United States and its NATO allies, quote-unquote, as they put it from time to time, for decades and decades. And suddenly, Gorbachev changes the relationship of the USSR to the Warsaw Pact countries. There are a number of things that have been set in motion by the U.S. and Germany and some others in Czechoslovakia and Hungary and other Eastern European countries that caused severe economic problems, and also there were reactionary forces in Poland in particular that were set in motion. And all of this stuff starts to come to a head in the 80s while Gorbachev decides we're not going to get involved in any of this stuff. And that's kind of the soil that everything follows in.
That's right. The events that led to 1991, the key year for the dissolution of the Soviet Union, the key events is what you mentioned, and it can be summarized in saying that Gorbachev in the 1980s denied military support to the governments of the Soviet Union satellite states. This means, if we think of history, that Hungary in 1956 would have been left undefended from the counter-revolution.
Right.
And in Czechoslovakia in 1968, it would have been left undefended from the what we call the counter-revolutionary element.
Right.
So by withdrawing the military support, and you know, he opened up in the satellite countries the what happened, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the East-West German unification, the breakaway of Lithuania, etc. So so it's as if, Gorbachev read history and said, huh, you know, if I withdraw the Soviet bases from the Eastern, then you know, the reaction will be emboldened. I had
That's
a student
right.
from Russia in the 1990s, and she was the daughter of somebody who was in charge, a father who was in charge of the military base in Prague. And she said they were absolutely astonished, the Russians in Prague, about just getting the order to leave.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
This
is
in 1968, right? In 1968, when they first got the order to leave, before they came back. That happened.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about...
In 1989.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
Also, that happened, just like... In 68, they got the order to leave, but then they had to come back
Right. So, you know, at that time, back in 1968, for example, also in 1956 in Hungary, also in East Germany, I believe in 1953 or
and
at
in
some
Poland.
Point. Yep, and in Poland also. When people raised the question about the changes that were being proposed by essentially counter-revolutionaries, the socialists, the communists, said this is actually an attempt at capitalist restoration. And the Trotsky, all these people, the democratic socialists, the Euro-communists, you know, 20 years later, all said that this was some paranoid delusion, and it was that the Stalinists were afraid of losing their iron grip
power
on the throat
empire.
Or whatever. And then in each and every case... in the late 1980s, within days of the declaration that the Communist Party was no longer the leading force in the country, capitalism was restored almost in toto across the countries. I saw it in Czechoslovakia, and I saw it in Poland in 1990.
Yeah. So Gorbachev facilitated this by, denying the muscle in case of counter-revolution. The second point is that the constituent republics of the Soviet Union, not in Asia so much, but in Eastern Europe, started legal moves towards declaring sovereignty, and this was not checked or objected to. For example, Lithuania declared independence on 11 March 1990.
Right.
Behind these movements, as you say, that happened overnight, to declare independence and separation from the Union. Behind this was, of course, the hand of the Western powers. And as Putin said at the Valdai Forum in November 2017, He says quite clearly, as a former FSB director, I know for sure that there was massive U.S. support for separatism and radicalism. He's speaking about the North Caucasus.
Right.
And he says, do not tell me otherwise, because this I know. And we know from Poland how heavy the hand was of the Vatican and in the movement in Solidarność. But anyway.
Well, you know, let me add something there, by the way. Take a look at the nearly 2,000-year history of the Roman Catholic Church.
Uh-huh.
And go back and count on one hand how many popes came from Poland. And then suddenly that pope came from Poland at the same time as Solidarity.
Yeah, it was a God's gift, Thatcher and Reagan.
Yeah, okay. And then ask yourself, how do we end up with a pope from Argentina at this moment?
I don't know.
Yeah, because okay. the battleground has shifted. Yeah. So okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's another program, the Vatican.
Absolutely.
So then the third point, the slow movement toward disintegration, mainly, really, it's the disempowerment of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. So in 1989, the Russian Soviet Federal Socialist Republic convenes a newly elected Congress of People's Deputies.
Right.
And the chair, this is 1989, and the chair is Boris Yeltsin.
Right.
Why do we need a Congress of People's Deputies? Because he starts building his own independent party.
Right.
And in March 1990, we can say safely that the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was forced or relinquished monopoly of political power, which it had had. That the Communist Party of the Soviet Union was the bulwark, what do you call it, the strength of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And what happened? Well, its demise began in March 1990 when party elements and party organization were eclipsed in power by state bodies such as this thing called the Congress of Deputies, but also newly created posts like President of the Soviet Union. Gorbachev had become independent. He became the president until he resigned in Christmas 1991. But Gorbachev became independent from the Politburo, faced few constraints for party leaders, except those that rose up in the coup of August 91. And in the summer of 1990, the party convened the 28th Congress, and what happened there? A new Politburo was elected. All the previous incumbents, except Gorbachev and what is his name, Vladimir Ivashko, the Deputy General Secretary, they were all removed.
Yeah.
And later that year, the party began work on a new program with a working title. It's very significant, towards a humane, democratic socialism. Does this remind you of socialism with a human face?
Right.
Because on top of everything else, we are commemorating the 1968 in August.
Counter-revolution. Right.
The
counter-revolution in Czechoslovakia,
not commemorating, but we're remembering.
Right.
And that was... You know, an attempt to create socialism with a human face, with a bunch of literati and intellectuals behind it.
Right, right. A petty bourgeois socialism.
Yeah.
With market economy.
Yeah, and they call that a smiley face.
Right, that's it.
Okay, so, all right, we're still on the key, you know, on the method by which you alluded in the beginning, by which Gorbachev worked his way to the eventual dissolution. So on 7 April 1990, a law was passed allowing a republic to secede if more than two-thirds, this is 7th April, because it's significant to note 7 April allowing a republic to secede if more than two-thirds of its residents voted for it in a referendum. Now, this was nothing new because this right to secede was granted by one of the first orders of the Bolshevik government.
That's right.
You have the right to be equal. You can join us. When in 1917, one of the orders was to the former Tsar colonies, let's call them that. The Bolshevik government said, you can join us and be equal, have equal status, or you can secede now or whenever you like. So that was in, and that was repeated in all three constitutions, I think it was, 19-something or other 20s, and then 1936, and then 1970s, and then, I don't know if that was, okay, that clause was repeated in all the constitutions of the Soviet Union that followed the order in 1917. But what happened on 7th April was followed immediately on June 12th of 1990, and the Russian the Russian Republic, Soviet Republic, declared Russian sovereignty.
Right.
So what we have here is the emergence of what Stalin was opposed to and fought, white Russian nationalism.
Right. And with Yeltsin at the head. And,
yes.
And Yeltsin, this is June 12th, okay? I was in Moscow.
This is June 12th, yeah.
Yeah, 1990. I was in Moscow May 27th or 28th, 1990. Mm-hmm. And I was still there June 1st. And I remember on June 1st, when I woke up, went outside the hotel, I get up early when I'm traveling, especially if I'm, you know, six time zones out of phase. And or seven time zones out of phase. So 6 o'clock in the morning, I remember listening to Radio Moscow on my shortwave, an English language broadcast from Moscow, but I'm listening to it on my shortwave. And they were discussing, they were reporting on Yeltsin having just arrived in Canada. He was in the Canada and the United States the first week in June, came back to Moscow, and within days made this declaration of Russian
sovereignty of the
right.
Russian. Yeah.
So you can see where it came from.
Yeah, yes, there was. Yeah, this would be a deviation in our discussion, but yeah, Yeltsin was invited by a whole gang of super conservative American, the Heritage Foundation, Dan Quayle met
right.
him, and you know what you're implying. He consulted with the United States.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so then you have this declaration of state sovereignty,
which is a government on the territory of the Soviet Union with a capital in Moscow, asserting its own power against the Soviet government. That's in essence what this is.
Yeah. It's just mind-boggling. And, I mean, yeah. So, we're now, these are the points, the background, briefly, of the 1990s. And we come to the year 1991. And we have very strange events. In March 1991, we have the Soviet Union referendum. That's a people's referendum. It is carried out throughout the entire territory of the Soviet Union. Some republics refused to cooperate, but I think seven? No, maybe, I can't remember. Maybe seven republics participated.
There were the participating republics let's see, the RSFSR, the Russian one, Azerbaijan, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Turkmenia, Ukraine, and Uzbekistan. Republics that did not participate: Armenia, Georgia, the three Baltics, and Moldova. Now, okay. in those republics where they did not participate, there was less than 50% voting, but there was still a turnout. And the turnout at 50%, actually, was the turnout here was, they're saying, is about 50%. It was, let's see, Armenia was 72.46% in favor of remaining in the Soviet Union. In Georgia...
See, that was an informal, that the people did it anyway?
Yeah.
What are you saying?
The official referendum had been held in Estonia, they wanted to reestablish an Estonian republic. Latvia held one in March of 91, both of them on March 3rd, 91, and also Latvia came. So they organized voluntary referenda without official sanction, and they had lower turnout. But they also, those that voted in those places... voted in favor of remaining in the USSR. In other words, yes, we have our republic. It's an independent republic, but it's still part of the USSR.
Yeah.
Others, there was actually a rather heavy turnout. For example, turnout in Latvia was 436,000, and it was 95% in favor of remaining in the Soviet Union.
So it was carried out through the, as you pointed out, and on Sunday, 17 March 1991, this referendum concerned the preservation of the Soviet Union, and it said the Soviet Union is a federation of equal republics. So it said, the questionnaire said, do you consider necessary the preservation of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics as a renewed federation of equal sovereign republics in which the rights and freedom of an individual of any nationality will be fully guaranteed?
Right.
That was the question.
Right.
So, and as you pointed out, it resulted in a majority of participating citizens voting in favor of preserving the Union as a renewed federation. In fact, the highest approval came from beyond the Urals, from the Asian republics.
Right. By the way, before you get off on that, just for context, the turnout in Estonia was 74%, and in favor of staying in the Soviet Union was 95% of that. In Latvia, it was 65%, 95.84 to stay in the Soviet Union. And Lithuania, it was 86.11% turnout, and it was 99.13% to stay in the Soviet Union. So in these republics that had unofficial referenda, the turnout was still more than we get in a presidential election, and it was massively in favor of staying inside the Soviet Union. And those were the places where the most opposition to Moscow resided.
Yes,
okay,
that's
just
right.
So people understand where the people of the USSR were at when these things that we're describing took place.
That's right. So what we have here is what in the West is called democracy, is actually the people vote for the union, the so-called self-appointed leader, and they're not self-appointed, but you know,
right.
These puppets or whatever they are.
Right.
They are for, they oppose the will of the people, because this is what happens then. In June 12th, same time as, same time as the 12th of June.
Correct.
There are presidential elections, and Yeltsin gets 58% of the vote. I don't know why, do you?
Nope. Well, at the time, it was to be president of the Russian Federated Republic, not president of the nation state. It's like voting for governor at that point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Right, complicated. It's like looking at the French Revolution, you know, week by week. But anyway, he's elected. So now we come to the so-called August coup and its aftermath. As I said, a treaty, the Union Treaty, was supposed to be signed on the 20th of August, and on the 19th of August of 1991, a state committee for the emergency situation in the USSR is formed, and the president is Gennady Yanayev, and he's the chair, and there are seven other people. And it seems that here's Yeltsin, the nationalist Russian. Here's Gorbachev mucking about and trying to sign a treaty called the Union that will save, according to the West, the Soviet Union. And here's the real people who are trying to save it.
Right.
You know? So it was according... So if you read this event... In the Western accounts, even just Wikipedia, they call them hardliners, conservatives. These are your Soviet loyalists. They're called conservatives,
right,
as opposed to the great liberal Democrat,
right,
that are these thieves that are coming in now. Anyway, it was an attempt by members of the government of the USSR. Not members of the government of the USSR, members of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union and of the KGB.
Right.
So, the intelligence apparatus and the state apparatus. To take control of the country from Gorbachev. So what was Gorbachev doing on vacation anyway, if he was
right,
supposed to sign a treaty?
Right.
This smells really, really bad. And so the coup leaders are described as hardline members of the Communist Party and were opposed to Gorbachev's reform program and the new Union Treaty. Well, yeah, they were
right,
opposed to the new Union Treaty that was going to change the name,
right,
of the whole country, as though,
yep,
there's nothing in a name.
The telling thing is they were changing the name because they were in the process of changing the essence of the relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. And this Union of Sovereign States was the proposed name of a reorganization of the Union of Socialist Republics, is how they put it. And it was proposed by Gorbachev. And it was, in our account in the West, it was an attempt to avert an end of the Soviet Union. This is how confusing they make citizens in the West. The Gorbachev was loyal to the Soviet Union and was going to preserve it. With what? The proposal was never implemented because what happened? Because of the August coup. So that was a nice excuse too.
Right.
And the dissolution, of course, occurred on the 26th of December.
And you know what happened? So what happened before that? Well, we got about a minute left. We're not going to make it into December.
My goodness.
But we've got on August 24th of 1991. Now, we were talking about August 19th through the 21st. Which is today's the 22nd that we're recording this. On August 24th, Gorbachev dissolved the Central Committee of the CPSU. He resigned as the party's general secretary, and then 5 days later, the Supreme Soviet suspended CPSU's activity on Soviet territory.
Mm-hmm.
They made the Communist Party illegal, like in a week.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was the goal of the United States, Great Britain, and others, Hitler, almost from the inception of the Soviet Union in 1922, and really from the... time that the Bolsheviks took control of the government in then October, now November of 1917. And I guess this is where we'll pick it up next week, because I want to make sure we detail what happened in December in particular very
particularly,
thoroughly.
Yeah, the Bélage Havas Accord, absolutely important.
Right.
Yeah, we have to continue this.
Okay, Luciana, thank you very much, and we'll speak with you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.